Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. In this episode, we are talking about the top 300 trade sales through Diamond to retailers in North America for April 2019. How you doing today, TJ?
I'm doing well. It looks like an interesting month.
It is. And I want to start by talking about how long the data has been coming out and give this month a little bit of context, because I think it's important. The numbers have been coming out forever and a day, but back in February 2003, Diamond released the numbers for that February and March, both how it had been doing it, which was as pre-orders based on the initial pre-orders of stuff, but then also how it was actually invoiced and sold as final sales to retailers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since they could do the pre-order stuff in advance after that month's orders, that meant they had that two-month period where they had the pre-orders, but obviously didn't have the final orders, which is why we have that two-month overlap.
Uh-huh.
Okay? But in my mind, pre-orders are fundamentally different than final orders in a number of very important ways. First off, and this is more important on the comic side than the trade side, but still relevant there, not everything pre-ordered actually comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a certain amount of pre-order sales that aren't sales in any meaningful way because they never showed. Now, the other thing that's different, and I think it makes a bigger deal on the trade side than on the comics side, is what we get as final sales on the numbers we've been looking at this whole time, again, going back to February 2003 with the final order stuff, includes pre-orders, advance reorders, which are reorders kind of placed before the item comes out, and then that first month of reorders. Basically, anything that the retailer ordered, regardless of when it was ordered, if it shipped to them and was invoiced within that first month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, since that second version of the data released for that February 2003, we have been getting what actually was invoiced at full retail value, not at the discounted value, but they got to use something, two stores for the month. So, we've got that for, 16-some-odd years now. Now, the reason I wanted to give all of that context, this is the lowest total for the top 300 during that time.
And you're talking about trades, correct?
Trades, yes.
Yeah.
Now, I got to caveat that last statement I said, though, with a couple of asterisks, because as longtime followers of the numbers will realize, well, they haven't released the top 300 for the whole time, which is true. They only started doing that back in November 2008. But if you look at the top 100 items, this is also the lowest total for that going that far back.
Mm-hmm.
But they only started releasing the top 100 back in 2004. I think it was March or thereabouts. And before that, it was 50. And in my database, the lowest number I have for the top 50 actually was February 2018, so this was the second lowest for the top 300.
Gotcha.
Top 50, actually. So, second lowest for the top 50, lowest for the top 100, lowest for the top 300, which is our current kind of metric and stuff. Bottom line, this is kind of the worst month the trades have done, at least according to the numbers I'm looking in front of me with my database and such, which, not a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
And we're outside of that first quarter, so you can't really say, well, you know, first quarter's kind of weak, maybe it's that.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
So I wanted to give all of that context before we did the breakdown, because it's a smaller pie than usual.
Absolutely. I mean, I was looking at the top item, and I'm like, wow, that's not the sales I would expect from the top item.
Yeah.
You know, for any month, not necessarily particular in regards to what the top item is, just the average number we're used to seeing.
Exactly. And we'll get to that in just a second. If we look at the breakdown, though, Marvel had 26.82% of the total units. DC had 24.06% of the total units, and Image another 19.75% of the total units for the top 300.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of, again, roughly I don't want to say an even split. It's definitely favoring Marvel a little bit, but those three publishers account for over 70%. The other 30% or so is split across, I don't know, another, 32 publishers?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of publishers were showing up this time, more so than I think we've seen before in the top 300. We do this by dollars. It skews a bit further. 34.86% went to Marvel, again, reflecting a higher average cover price. 27.39% of the total retail dollars for the top 300 to DC, 14.76 to Image. That is accounting for 77, a hair over 77% of the total dollars for the top 300. And then again, the other 32 publishers are accounting for the rest.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not seeing any overwhelming winner in terms of units. You could argue Marvel by dollars, but again, I would almost argue Image, even though it's got a ton less of the dollars than Marvel, because they're kind of spreading that around with just a average price. It's about, you know, less than half what Marvel's was.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it comes down to this is a bit of an unusual month because it's really lackluster sales across the board.
Yeah.
Now, as you're talking about that top selling item, the total for that was low. It was 4,743 units,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the lowest high points, I think.
Yeah. Fact, and go ahead.
I think there was one item that did worse, and that was, again, in that February 2018 month I mentioned that also had a low overall total. I believe its top seller was Saga Volume 8 with reorder activity of 3,026 units.
Okay. And with that being in February, that's a little bit more understandable. We usually see a dip in the beginning of the year as publishers are not necessarily putting out quite as much material, and it's not the high end, it's not the top end creators. Everyone's kind of catching up from the holiday season, things like that.
And it was reorder activity, so a bit more understandable.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And the one interesting thing is, it's not like this property isn't by creators that are well known. This is a Mark Millar property, correct?
Yeah, this is it's Magic Order. So his trade, the first trade he did after the Netflix deal, and it was reasonably well received as a comic.
Mm-hmm.
So for it to do lackluster being a relative thing here for a new property, again, it's an Image title and stuff. It's not that it did badly, but we see things that do significantly better than this on the trade side if they're really a top tier property.
Yeah, I guess one question I would have is, it's a little bit easier on the comic side because you guys kind of see the trends, you know, as the books kind of come and go. With the trade side, a lot of, I think, the cyclicalness of the numbers we see is basically depending on what's coming out. Because there's no longer even a normal like 6 month trade cadence on a lot of these series because so many series don't come out regularly. You know what I mean? So sometimes it's almost a year in between trades, or, you know, 17 months, or you just so many different series nowadays are so scattershot in terms of what's coming out. So I think it's sometimes very hard to make definitive judgments about trends. But the way you do that is you back out and you say, okay, well, let's continue to monitor this for the next three or four months and see if there's a general turn, a trend of overall trade sales down in the direct market. The one other question I would have is, when you look at the book scan numbers, that's where, you know, a lot of the other businesses in Barnes & Noble and Amazon, do they only publish that for 1 year worth of data? They don't give you monthly on that, right?
They don't give anything to me on that.
I meant you, but I'm just saying, I was just trying to think of, well, would there be a way for us to see if a lot of these sales are going to places like Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and so you see an overall increase in the percentage of the total market that's going there, and then that's why you see some of the stagnation here in the trade side. But if that's a once a year number, it's really hard to parse that out.
It's actually available to people who purchase that data on a much more frequent basis than once a year.
Mm-hmm.
But it only gets leaked to Brian Hibb, who shares that in his article once a year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he's very upfront on kind of the caveats and whatnot on those numbers. And it's not that he's had the exact data set every year, but he's had year-end numbers of one sort or another going back, I'm going to say maybe 15 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly if you're interested in the discussions we have every month and you're unfamiliar with Brian Hibb's articles on these, He's currently over on The Beat, I believe, is who's doing his articles these days. And about, again, once a year, sometimes near the beginning of the year, sometimes a little later, depending on how busy he's been, he will do an in-depth, and I mean in-depth, article on the book scan numbers and what they tell him.
As well as the comparison to how his shop does, because he has one comic shop that is almost exclusively a book market shop. And then his second store that he bought, which is much more of a single issue store.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he kind of he has his foot in multiple venues to be able to kind of compare and contrast and say, well, it's interesting that these items sold very well in the direct market versus, you know, the book scan market and vice versa.
Well, and Brian Hibbs has always been very good about not only sharing his experience, but stating it is his experience and that other stores are going to differ on this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is no universal truth on this stuff. And again, if any listener is interested in these sorts of discussions, not only do I recommend checking out his articles and his blog, some of his past articles have been collected into two volumes of the Tilting at Windmills, which is the name of his column. He's done two books of those.
Okay.
That are fascinating reading. And it's also kind of eerie and a little almost depressing at times how much of some of the stuff he was saying like 20 years ago still rings true and holds true today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the changes he's been asking for in the numbers and such, I think were valuable then and probably more valuable now and still haven't happened.
No, I definitely agree on that. It's just it's so many different stakeholders. It's really hard to get people to cooperate. Let's put it that way.
Oh, absolutely. And I think part of what makes the comic market so unique is while we do have the Barnes & Noble, the Amazon, the big stores and stuff playing in the marketplace, really in the direct market, it is predominantly independent mom and pop stores.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no incentive and no kind of muscle memory for them to aggregate their data and play nice, which is a shame because, man, I would love to supplement this information with information at different from all the different stores or as many as I could get. What did they order in? What did they sell through? Is it the first time they've had the stuff? Have they had it before? You know, information like that.
Mm-hmm.
To really give some context for like, is that 4,743 units, is that stuff that's still sitting on store shelves predominantly? Did they blow through most of it? You know, what's going on there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for some of these things that are reorder, is it reorder of selected groups or selected parts of the country? Or is it something that's just a trickle, you know, across the board? Because if you look at rank 4, we've got Umbrella Academy Volume 1, Apocalypse Suite, Trade Paperback, Reorder Activity, 2,748 units. That's good, solid reorder activity. Obviously, the Netflix show, I think, is playing into that and generating interest on this property.
Yeah.
But is it interest that is minor and spread across the nation, or is it more segmented and vocal in certain areas over others?
Oh, absolutely. And like you said, that's a 27th time that we've seen this property on the chart. And I'm assuming that some of the stores stocking up or having at least a couple copies available for people that are coming in and asking about it. And, you know, especially some stores may be expecting, well, you know, considering who's helped create the series and is a creator of that, there might be some crossover from people who aren't necessarily comic readers. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. One of the other stats that would be interesting to have if we had information from individual stores is not only how many copies did they order, but how many copies did they have on hand if and when they reordered?
Mm-hmm.
Because is it something where they're gearing up for interest, or, hey, they're out and they're doing it, or, hey, they sold one, they ordered one, or they sold one and they, you know, to keep two in stock or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be interesting information to have. I think the odds of getting it are like zero, which is a shame. And this is the sort of thing that I really hope a group like Comics Pro, which is a retailer organization, is actively pursuing, because I think there's a lot of information to be had there. I think that's probably the second best data to mine for comic book sales that's out there. And I would say the best source is digital reader information, both from Comixology, the DC Universe app, the Marvel Comics Unlimited app, stuff to where you can see how far does somebody get, how quickly do they go for that next issue, or do they jump to something else? You know, are there clear reading paths, or is it more scattershot, or just whatever happens to be promoted is what gets read.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree with you there. Because one of the things I think we would have a problem with is getting this data is, you know, a lot of these people, like you said, are independent operators of businesses, and the kind of operation that they would be able to trust with that data would be something like Comics Pro, where they have an established relationship, or at least a majority of the stores do. And they know that they're, for the most part, looking out for their best interest, and they would hopefully, obviously, you know, randomize the data, or, you know, de-identify it.
Share it
in a way to help the stores make them, you know, the way you would sell it is, you know, this is will help you make decisions. Now, obviously, you have to make those decisions within the context of your local, you know, customer base, but more information is always better generally. Obviously, there's something, you know, such as overload, but the biggest thing I've learned over listening to comics podcasts and interviews with retailers is a lot of them, they only know what works in their little market. And it's so hard to grow sales when you don't, you know, it's just almost like exchange of information could be so helpful for people gaining new ideas about how to try and get people to buy the material.
Yeah. And if there was some way to capture all the information that each individual retailer has in kind of a standardized way, to where you could start to group stores of these are operated, these things work in similar manners, and these others work differently.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you could start to develop personas for both readers, retail outlets, comics, and start figuring out, well, these types of comics work better for these retailers because they have these readers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and figure out what's working and why, and then order accordingly and produce accordingly.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's a ton of information that I think would benefit creators if they understood better what the reading patterns really were and why. But I think we're a ways away from getting that kind of information at all in the industry. And that's a shame, because I think it's really needed these days.
Yeah. It's, I feel like comics could use all the help it could get, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And again, the fact that this is just such a low sales month, I think just kind of underscores that. But even if it were a record sales kind of a month, let's face it, those aren't necessarily, you know, brilliant sales either compared to the potential audience out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on average, and I'm doing an average including the months that had 50 and 100 items in it, 304,656 units is what the top 300 average is at. The worst case, and this is again, going to be a little lower than what we had this month, because some months only have 100 or 50 items, was 103,803 units, but the best case is 455,347 units, which is only, you know, time and a half again the average.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we haven't hit kind of that ceiling of potential sales out there, but I think to be doing better, there's got to be a bit more of an organized game plan as to understanding what works and why. There's a limit to how far I can take that sort of analysis with only aggregate numbers nationwide at a retail level versus individual sales that point of sale systems are actually collecting at many retail outlets, and reading information, speed of reading, page turns, etc., that digital venues can collect.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, if Marvel and DC are not leveraging that kind of digital information out of their platforms, they're missing a major opportunity. And if I had to guess, Marvel's the more likely one to be doing that sort of a thing. They've just always seemed to be a bit more future thinking in terms of technology.
Uh-huh.
But if you figure there's, I don't know, 3,000 retail outlets out there that we would look at and say, yep, that's a comic store, there's only a handful of items that made it theoretically to every one of those this time around.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's just the reality of the low numbers we're seeing, right?
Yeah. I mean, really, the top three items, I think, would be the only thing, just based on the number of units and the number of stores out there, depending exactly how many there are. And I honestly don't know the exact number. I've heard around 3,000. Sometimes I would argue probably 2,000 may seem a little more realistic. I don't know, and it changes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing really did brilliantly this time around. And then we hit a lot of things where it's just, yeah, they sold okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then many things where it's like, ah, they didn't sell so good, but maybe it's reorder activity, or maybe, ah, it's not something I would have expected to sell all that well. So.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at the breakdown in terms of like reorder activity versus new items, it looks about average. You know, sometimes, you know, you'll see more for DC and image. Image, obviously, it's pretty common to see much more reorder activity than new items. That's kind of part of their publishing model. That's where their creators kind of make their profit, is on the reorder stuff.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like an abnormal month in that respect of there's a ton more reorder, so therefore we should see lower average sales. You know, I think it is a lower sales month, and I'm not quite sure why.
I think some of it is, some of it's luck of the draw as to just what happened to come out this month or whatever. But I do think some of it is, if you don't have one of those, I don't say high profile, but high interest items or things that really were received exceptionally well, and people think, you know, man, when that comes out in trade, I've either got to get it or I've got to get it again.
Mm-hmm.
Because many of the things I'm seeing here aren't ones that I'm thinking, wow, yeah, you know, I really thought that would have just, you know, done so much better than this.
Yeah. And some of it is the reality of them just collecting everything that they put out. If you look at the top, I'm looking at the list for the comics, and the fact that Marvel put out 118 items, 14 of them being reorder, versus DC 66. So new items for, you know, the single issue side or single issue-ish, 104 for Marvel, DC 52. That Marvel number seems insane. And obviously, they, for the most part nowadays, will collect everything that they solicit on that side. So some of these numbers over here on the trade side, maybe you're just finally seeing the consequences of them publishing everything no matter what, and Marvel continuing to be like, we're just going to keep flooding the market with material, even if the average total unit sales for those is dropping.
Yeah, I certainly think the leadership at Marvel and DC have fundamentally different approaches on publishing comics. And I think there's an aspect at Marvel where more is considered better or necessary, whichever, but they're certainly producing more and more.
Mm-hmm.
DC tends to have pulled back a little over recent years, the number of titles and the frequency, which on the one hand, not necessarily a bad move if you can focus more on that and get better material out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I would argue they're not getting better material out there. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of discussion in the last day or two on the Slack channel centered around specifically Tom King, but also around, you know, if editors are going to let him do this kind of a long run on Batman, you know, is he really to blame? And there's I see both sides of that. I think there's plenty of blame to go around. I was thinking just recently that if you were to look at from my perspective, using my buying as a barometer, which I think is a very good barometer because it literally translates into dollars, this is probably the all-time worst DC universe ever, I would say, in the last 30, 40 years based on my buying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a little harsh because it's not like it's horrible, but there are aspects where I drop books for specific reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And it really does make me think that somewhere at DC, they've taken their eye off the ball. Should I be considered a desired targeted reader? And perhaps I am not. But then the question is, who took their eye off that ball? Is that something that goes to Bob Harris as the editor-in-chief, invisible though he may be? Or does it go to Dan Didio and Jim Lee, who are the head honchos over there, and in theory, controlling the direction of the universe?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, it's tough because, you know, they also have the new management, and, you know, those changes are probably still in the works in terms of what the new company owners want in terms of pushing. Are they going to push for the Marvel route, or are they going to push, you know, like I said, to cut back and focus? I don't know.
Yeah, I think some of the mistakes they've made predate the current change of leadership above, you know, Jim Lee and Dan Didio. But, you know, it's looking more and more to me like they have not been good stewards of the DC universe. And I don't know if it's just they haven't had the time to do it directly and they've delegated to the wrong people or what, but, you know, I look at the tenure of Paul Levitz in particular, which was both lengthy and I think really solid in terms of, you know, what was produced and how they treated creators and the general reputation of DC.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the same for Jeanette Kahn. But I would say, you know, of late, it's not been a good year for DC. And I think some of the decisions they've made with Rebirth looked promising. And now I look at where they are, what, 2.5, 3 years later, and how they've done an about face on much of that. It's disappointing. And I think that is reflected in these sales.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, you know, kind of who cares.
Yeah. And I think some of that filters through to the trade side, because if the word of mouth is not driving the single issues, it's certainly hard to drive the trade sales as well. Now you'll see infrequently you'll see something do well in trade, you know, outside of doing well in the singles, but that's pretty rare.
Yeah. I would say generally the trades are going to be, you know, anywhere from a fifth to a tenth, roughly, the sales of the component issues or whatnot. And part of that's just a reflection of the higher price point and things mm-hmm. like that, and people having already gotten it on the single issue side. But it's the kind of thing, if there really is a huge demand for something to the point that they can't keep the comics in stock, that's where you expect the trades to really benefit. That's where we see something like the Venom by Donny Cates, Volume 2 here, second on the list, with 3,768 units, kind of benefiting from the heat on that title.
Mm-hmm.
People are saying, wow, I've been hearing good things about it. I'll pick up the trade.
Exactly. Like, especially if they missed out on the single issues, they can get the first trade and then get back caught up.
Exactly. I'm not seeing that by and large on the DC side.
Yeah, it is interesting times. It's interesting to hear when I listen to the podcast with you guys, especially on the weekly review show, as you kind of go through the, you know, a Marvel and a DC, you know, every week. So that's the most current one. Since I read the majority of what I read is independent, I honestly don't read a lot of superhero comics anymore. It's kind of a world I'm just like listening to from afar.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to see how your guys' his likes and wants have changed. When you said, it's so interesting to me, you said a few minutes ago when I, you know, I've dropped a number of books, it used to be crazy, the idea of you not being all in at both those publishers. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So their behavior really does have consequences. And I just wonder how long until they start experiencing some of those consequences. I mean, I just, looking at that number of books that Marvel published, that's insane for that many single issues in 1 month. That's crazy.
It absolutely is. And some of it is decent material. Some of it is literally filler. It's like, well, we could throw a story out for this.
Well, I think so many retailers are caught up in the variant game that some of those numbers for some of those lower selling series, the actual people reading it may be like 5,000 copies, but they say they sell 10, 12 just because they're chasing variants for other things that they can sell. I mean, that's one of the interesting things I've learned from listening to some of the Cowabunga Comics insight is they will oftentimes have a variant pay for 40 to 50 extra copies of a book they know they're not going to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, they're very good about keeping their margins where they won't lose money no matter what because they pre-sold that variant. But just think about that. How many copies are literally sitting in stores, and the store owners have done the math when saying, even if I don't sell another one of these because I sold this variant for $65, I made it out. You know what I mean? So that's like, so then those Marvel books have an average sell through, or quote unquote sell through from Diamond. Oh, we sold this many copies, but maybe a third of them are just sitting somewhere rotting.
Yeah, it's interesting because I had gotten a email from DCBS. Actually, I got two recently. Both were for variant cover items that they'd gotten one of, and whoever responded first could get it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, I think, was about $10. The other was, I think, about $100. I forget which ones they were. But what I found interesting about those emails, I haven't been a customer of DCBS for like a year and a half now.
Uh-huh.
And I'm getting the emails. Now, maybe they just decided, hey, blanket everybody we've ever dealt with, which is not a bad strategy. Or maybe it's a, we've got this, we thought we had it sold, it didn't sell, we bought it, let's cast the net wide to get rid of the damn thing.
Get rid of the thing. And
I don't know. I mean,
yeah, you also know at their sales level, they're hitting probably a lot of the numbers to get all those extra, variants, unlocking a lot of that numbers because of their business size. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It may be getting harder and harder to sell some of those variants. And some stores especially have built their business model on that. That's a problem.
Yeah, and I know that Cameron Christine at DCBS were smart enough not to build their business model on that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they're selling enough stuff that I'm sure it literally cost them the $399 or minus the discount, whatever the cost of the item was, which was comparatively negligible compared to what it will go for on the open market, the risk to them was nothing. Mm-hmm. But the potential lost sale of, yeah, I could turn this $2 item into a $100 item, I'd want to make that happen too.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there's an aspect of variance which is not good for the industry. I've said that for years and years and years. And it really shows, I think, how wildly kind of deceptive first issue sales in particular, where they tend to lump a lot of those onto, are, because they don't reflect what's the actual interest in the comic. And it shows just how wasteful the process is to go literally print hundreds and hundreds and thousands of copies of something that are just going to collect dust in a mm-hmm. store. It's bad enough they collect dust like in my personal collection, but I mean, that's to be expected. I think that's the good side of it, I guess. But it just seems like if there's too much of particularly the publisher business models and creator business models based on this, as we shift to a more digital audience, and I think that will naturally happen over time, collectability doesn't play out that way there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, it's so funny when you think about that on the digital side. It's so interesting. A lot of the digital comics will include just all of the other variant covers that got sold on the individual issues at the back as just JPEGs at the back. You know what I mean? So you can see them, and it just completely takes away the collectability in terms of that aspect of it.
Yeah, but it's funny how that happens, because I think the other thing conceivably we're seeing here, and information we would need to really know, is how much of what we're seeing here is maybe a lack of interest in this particular material or something like that, and how much of it is getting taken, the sales taken away from subscription services.
Yeah, that's true.
Because by the time this stuff's collected, much of it may be and should be on certainly the Marvel Digital and Comic Digital Comics Unlimited, which is a 6 month behind system. Some of it'll be over on the DC stuff, which is I think a year behind. Is there really much incentive to say, you know what, I'm gonna go spend that $17.99 for that Venom by Donny Cates, or you know what, I'm gonna wait just a little bit longer and that'll get me the Marvel subscription for 3 months?
Mm-hmm.
It's just it's interesting to see where the sales are and are not going, and you know what could and should be done about it. Now, the other thing to keep in mind with this month is there are a couple of items, many of them were Image, but that even with these lackluster sales, some of them only got that because they seem to be heavily discounted.
Oh, okay.
You look down at ranks 70 and 72, we've got Izola Volume 1 and East of West Volume 1. Those have a much higher retailer rank than they otherwise ought to, indicating they were heavily discounted. Likewise, you go further down on the list and you see various other items of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
Deadly Class Volume 2 at rank 134. Walking Dead, Ice Cream Man Volume 1 at rank 195. And then there are some others even further down on the list that have similar kinds of discounting, some of those by Dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's not necessarily price that's the hindrance here. It may just be actual lack of interest in some of the material.
Yeah, that's true.
Or lack of urgency of interest in the material. Let's phrase it that way. Because, I mean, you know what? That Venom by Donny Cates, probably always going to be available.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's not a bad thing.
No, not at all. And then, like, it's interesting you say about lack of the urgency. That was one of the ones I wanted to highlight at quantity rank 83, the final collection of Mage.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been a series that's kind of a long-running series that basically he stopped making for 15 years, 20 years?
15, I think, and there was a good gap between the first two.
Yeah, and less then he of a gap, back. Yeah, finishes it up, and I know that Image has been republishing the other trades to kind of, you know, put that stuff back in the market, and this is, the last book, and it only sold 796 copies in its first month, at least in the direct market. And that seems to me to be pretty low. Now, maybe it's because it's a property that his time has come and gone, the art style has come and gone, the people who were fans of that material already had most of it and maybe just got the single issues. You know, I don't know. We wouldn't expect that to sell. And maybe there'll be some reorder activity, or maybe some people are waiting for like an omnibus. I don't know.
But let's take Mage as an example and dig a little deeper into that, because there was a point where Matt Wagner was a big deal.
Yeah, Grendel, everything. Yeah.
I think there were a couple of points where that was true. Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of his comeback as he was doing some of the stuff on Batman, some of the miniseries and stuff there. Mm-hmm. But this didn't hit during that.
Mm-mm.
And not only is this the culmination of the Mage saga, but it's the only Mage trade on the list this time.
Yeah, so not even the other one that was, because I think this was like a 15-issue run that they made into 3 5-issue trades. So the other two, there's not as much demand as anticipated, at least in the collected edition form. I don't know how well the single issue sold.
But the point being, if this were truly the big deal it was at one point, mm-hmm. we would have seen reorder activity on some of the others, I would hope.
That's true. And I think this goes to another point, John. There's so much material now, and people's attention span is so fragmented by all forms of entertainment. It is so hard to stand out, even with something that is like the conclusion to a property that was very popular.
Yeah, I think the conclusion of this property, because it was so long since it mm-hmm. was last out there in the previous volume, the big question a lot of people was not when's the next issue coming out, but what's Mage and who's Matt Wagner?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. So I think that was a almost crippling aspect of this, which is a shame.
I mean... Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of to be expected.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the only recent work that I've been familiar with Matt Wagner in the last few years has been a lot of the Shadow books he's been doing at Dynamite.
Yeah.
And like that. Yeah. So in terms of exposure younger readers would have, or you know, people would have to other stuff to build up to this, you're right. It's been a long time.
Well, and on the monthly side, the first two issues were over 10,000, but everything else was noticeably below.
Okay.
So it's not even like it was doing gangbusters on the single issue side for people to say, wow, I really got to go get this.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember having picked up, I think, the reprints of the first volume when the second one was coming out. And I think that was the early 80s, maybe. So, I mean, it's literally a generation later, I would think, of readers.
Uh-huh.
And that just doesn't work well.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a shame. But, I mean, the 796 units it did, not impressive, not horrible. Maybe it'll do well in the long tail, but it's going to take it a while for it to do that. And I think there's no immediate expectation that it will, given we didn't see reorder activity of the other volumes.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, is that if you would kind of see the groundswell, you would hope to see at least a few reorder activities from the previous ones. I doubt anyone's going to be jumping in on volume 6. So
no, but if people had saw it, asked the retailer what it was, and they got a good sales pitch of, wow, this is some great stuff, you've really got to go read the previous volumes, hey, I've got the full collection here, they're not that expensive, give it a shot, see what you think.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it could have done better.
Yeah, that's true.
But it begs the question, how many of the people work in the stores these days were around during those previous volumes to recommend it? Because, I mean, let's face it, a lot of people working at comic stores, young.
Yeah, it's true.
And that makes sense. It's you know, a good place for them and stuff. Again, I worked at a comic store when I was younger. But the number of people at that age that are that well-read on material that much older, not much. It's mm-hmm. it's very unusual, I would say, at least in my experience.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And there's, you know, there's eras in terms of what fans are into, and stuff gets forgotten. That's for sure.
Well, and I'd love to have some sort of meaningful statistics on what older material sells at a store and what older material are the people working at the store into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, if you've got somebody who was a really big fan of the Earth 2 stuff that Roy Thomas had done back in the day, do Earth 2 characters sell better than at that store than at other stores? Even if not massively better, is there a trickle effect based on the interest of the people working at the store? I mean, it stands to reason that there could be. I just don't know if there is. And then if there is, is there a way to build up interest in those people is kind of thought leaders that can then, you know, benefit sales across the board. Because we've got a lot of things that are already becoming kind of that sort of, I want to use the term legacy property, and I'm using that almost in a software sense. Legacy software is stuff that somebody else wrote that you've got to maintain. It's not the only definition, but it's a workable one for here. But older, uncurrent material, I think things like Injustice already fall into that category.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing new driving new readers to that material. It's sitting in the back issues and on trade shelves, yet it seems to do okay on the list here. It's got a few items here.
Yeah. Well, I think that one, definitely one that benefits from word of mouth. You know, whenever people ask me a good story that's kind of like a self-contained story, and I know there's obviously like tie-ins with the video game and whatnot, but that's one of the ones I recommend. But I'm also much more of a Vertigo, Elseworlds kind of guy, so I always like to recommend the out-of-continuity dark stories anyway. So,
well, it's an easier way to get people on board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's not something where I feel I've got to go get the entire universe or whatever, yeah, easier sell.
Mm-hmm.
But is there going to come a point where that's no longer the go-to suggestion you've got, and it falls to the wayside on your suggestion list? You know, there's certain things that while they're hot, and when they're not, they cool off quickly, and it's hard to reheat them.
Mm-hmm.
Despite how good they may be. And let's face it, not everything is in that so good category.
Oh, absolutely.
So let's see, we talked about volume one of Umbrella Academy. We've also got volume two there, ranked number eight with 2,249 units. Again, same rationale with the renewed interest in the property from the Netflix series,
mm-hmm.
Which is good for those creators. I was just surprised how quickly the list kind of hit 1,000 and then went below. A number of the things that are in that above 1,000 category are things like, you know, Dark Knight's Metal, Mr. Miracle, Final Crisis, Infinity War, stuff like that. Things that are high-profile-ish properties.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm not the least bit surprised they're there. But even at 1,000 units, every other or every third store is getting a copy.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, it's probably either reordering because you know you can sell it, or you know your clientele and know that you'll eventually sell it, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, and I think there are some things that are safe bets to put on the rack, even if you don't have a known sale for them. Mm-hmm. And some of them, if you know your clientele well enough, are worth having on the shot. You could sell it to that person.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But it just comes down to, you know, how well do you know the material? How well do you know your customer base?
Yeah.
And then from a reader point of view, how well do you communicate with your retailer? If they understand who you are and what you like, they're more likely to stock stuff you're likely to buy. And there's no guarantee there. They may not give a damn about you, but if they're smart, they will. Yeah,
another interesting one is at 137, Batman White Knight. And the reason I highlight this one is, you know, reorder activity, sixth time, 498 copies. And, you know, I don't necessarily know that that's a great amount of copies, but there's been enough either good buzz or sales, depending on which version DC wants to say, to make more material, right? So Sean Murphy is making another, follow-up to this. So I don't know if they had a very good sales in the single issues, or there's just enough word of mouth, or the honest truth, John, one of the only things they can sell quite well at DC right now is still Batman stories. So they're always going to be willing to re-up Batman story writers.
There is that. I would be hard pressed to argue that, although Tom King's doing a good job of driving down sales of Batman, in my opinion.
Well, interestingly, you said that. You know, the conversation we've had, and obviously I'm not on Slack, so I don't know if you guys have gotten into the details of this. You know, the thing that had been bandied about was the 115 or so issue run and yada, 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 and how it was driving you guys crazy because you guys were not fans of the material currently. Mm-hmm. And my understanding is, I recently read that he's getting his last issue is 85 on the main series, and that he's going to finish up his story in a standalone.
He's getting bounced off the main Batman book and going to get a 12-issue Batman and Catwoman series after the, again, 85, which I think goes through City of Bane or whatever, and that will allow him to get the rest of the way done.
Gotcha.
Most of the rest of the way done.
I think that the decrease in sales and probably some pushback online and in the social media, I mean, as much as DC can't admit to people that they make their decisions based on the feedback they get from their fans, there has to be some aspect of that. And obviously the sales have been trending downward. So I think there has been some effect. He probably did have an idea about 115 issues, and the sales reality and the pushback from people complaining, I think, may have changed the reality of that.
Well, we know DC reacts as much to feedback as to lack of feedback. It was mm-hmm. the known lack of feedback that directly led to the New 52 and Rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they realized nobody gave a damn what they were doing, it's like, well, we got to do something.
Yeah.
You know, that was one of the times they kind of woke up and realized that Hal Jordan was an intergalactic criminal or whatever, not this space cop that they thought he was. And there's an aspect of, well, maybe you should pay a little more attention to what your creators are doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and while the White Knight stuff here only did under 500 units of new activity, it's at almost 22,000 units for the trade. And if we go look at how it did on the comics side, it was doing, I think, 73,000 plus at its lowest.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely it was doing head and shoulders above virtually everything else out there other than the main Batman book. Yeah, why not go back to the well on that?
Yeah.
And if they can do it successfully, more power to them.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. And then obviously right below it, two items below it is the Venom by Donny Cates, the first volume of that. So seeing good seeing reorder activity on that. I don't want to say anything is good reorder activity this month, but.
Well, it's not bad reorder activity. It is reorder activity.
Yeah.
It's funny because on the comic side, reorder activity is icing on the cake. Here, it's so much of the substance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing that's worth noticing, if you go to rank 78, we've got Doctor Strange by Donny Cates. You'll note a theme there, which mm-hmm. is 814 units. And again, Donny Cates is doing pretty well these days.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime that they're, you know, titling a book such and such by so and so, they're selling the so and so as much as the such and such.
Oh, absolutely. And which is interesting because, you know, Marvel got in trouble a year or two ago for saying we can't sell artists anymore, we can't sell books based on artists anymore. Now, obviously, I understand that a lot of these collected edition titles go by the writer, and I get that. But it's just interesting that, you know, when it works, they're willing to trumpet the name of the creator. When it doesn't, you know, then they give up.
Yeah, and I get it. And if you go further down the list to rank 179, we've got Thanos Wins by Donny Cates.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, more power to him for getting his name on the marquee that way, in addition to, you know, having the credit being it titled that way.
Mm-hmm.
It also drives me completely nuts when they title things that way. Because doing a volume-to-volume comparison when it's not really a sequential numbered volumes of a title.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that ship has sailed, sunk, and sailed a few more times.
Yeah, I think that the companies are bound and determined to try and defeat any database software for categorization and classification of their series. Let's put it that way.
They are, but isn't that now self-defeating that since you need to have that kind of database of stuff for a digital platform to release your material on?
I know, right? It's pretty crazy when you think about it.
It's insane. It's funny because it goes back to the swinging pendulum of nobody will buy a first issue because it's an untested quantity to nobody will buy an issue number above whatever because it's too long in the tooth. You know, we've seen the industry swing both ways on that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I get both mindsets, but there's an aspect of almost they both can't be true. But I think they kind of both are is the thing.
Well, and I think it's I don't want to say it's like a lazy crutch, but I think what happens is they just get frustrated that they can't move the needle. And so they just try anything that'll work, even if it's short term. And yeah, it may work short term, but are you damaging your long term prospects? You know, and that's been the question, I think, for the last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. And I definitely think that question of the short game versus the long game is something the publishers and the creators really need to be a lot more cognizant of how they answer.
Yeah. And I, you know, like when I see how many single issues Marvel is putting out, I know that there are people at Marvel that work there that know it's not good. Mm-hmm. But I think that they're literally just caught on the hamster wheel, and they literally, their bosses just look at spreadsheets and say, well, is the number up or is the number down? And that's all they care about. You know what I mean? So it doesn't matter.
Well, there was a comment, I think this morning, on Slack on, revolving kind of decompressed storylines, specifically in this case with Tom King. And it was, well, if he can get away with it, why shouldn't he? You know, mm-hmm. kind of the, if I were a creator and I could tell one story in six issues or 12 and therefore not have to come up with another story for another six issues, and it puts food on my table, I'm going to exploit the system. You know, that was the mindset being espoused, and I get it. But it's long game, short game. Short game, that works. Long game, you're really watering down the material in some respect, at least thinning it out over time.
Mm-hmm.
That dilutes the interest level in it and results in lower sales. You know, there's action reaction to be had here, and you can't have long-term success if you're totally fumbling the short game all the time, but you could be totally winning the short game and fumbling long-term success all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that the publishers need to be doing a lot better at it than they are. Because, again, we hit months like this where most of the stuff is just kind of lackluster sales.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some of it, you know, you look at Kingdom Come getting, what, another 380 issues of reorder activity. Ah, it's not a big deal. But, you know, it's reorder activity. It was, to a certain extent, free for them to get that. Yeah, they had to print it. They had to store it. Whatever. But it's not like massive effort to go do it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's all kinds of different ways you can look at it. And it's one of those things where on this list, having a ton of reorder activity is a really good thing. I would say if we had this level of reorder activity on the comics side, I'd be like, what the hell's wrong with the material that was released that month?
Good point.
And we did have one month, I think, where we had just a crazy amount of reorder activity. And I think that was...
I think the retail rank was very low on a lot of those. They were kind of clearing out a lot of their... warehouse, to be honest.
Well, I think with that one, it was either the villain month getting reordered, or it was the second month of the new 52.
Okay.
It was massive reorder and DC stuff, and it was clearly an anomaly case.
Mm-hmm.
And not one that we've seen before or since. So, I mean, I expect there to be ebbs and flows in the material coming through. Some months is just going to be better than others. But again, this is certainly looking like an all-time low for the period of data I've got. And not having any, you know, new Walking Dead or Saga or something of that level to boost sales. Because let's face it, it wouldn't have taken a whole lot to get this to be not the lowest month on record.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't get it. Now, granted, it would have taken another item in the top, like, five to do that. But, again, you look at some months where you've got one item that would have sold better than the top five this month. It's just, that's how it goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so hard on the trade side. There's just so many variables, but I agree with you. The trend this month was not good.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I did prepping for this discussion was I was curious about price points. So what I did was look at how the price points have been trending on the trade side as well as on the comics side. And part of this was spurned by a comment somebody had made on Slack about how comics ought to cost thus and so, as if there's a natural price for comics.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah, maybe there is, maybe there's not. Don't know. I took it a little bit different way in the research I did, and I said, what was the main price point? So find the price point that had the most items on the comic list, on the trade list. If there were ties, go for the higher priced item. And see what the trend was.
Mm-hmm.
And on the comic side, I don't think it'll be very surprising. First, it was $2.95, then it was $2.99, and now it's $3.99. And there's a pretty wide area there of, I don't know, 2-3 years where it bounced a little back and forth, where it started to go up to $3.99 and stay there, and then it went back to $2.99 and stayed there, and then kind of bounced to bounce, and then back up to $3.99.
Mm-hmm.
So there was definitely some solid pushback on that price point on the comic side, but after a couple of years, that kind of falls away and loses out. On the trade side, it was interesting because, by and large, it was starting out, a lot of it was at that roughly $10 price point, $9.99. You know, sometimes it would be at that $14.99 kind of a price point. There was a period where it was definitely hitting that $19.99 price point or $14.99, kind of bouncing between those two. A couple of months, it got up to that $25 mark. Recently, there have been a couple of months, it's been back as that $10 mark for the, again, the most prevalent price point.
Mm-hmm.
But for most of the last, we'll say 12 years, it's been in that $15 to $20 price point range, which I think is not bad and is actually kind of the sweet spot. Because
mm-hmm.
I think we could all agree that as much as we'd like all trades to be $9.99, they're not going to make money. They're going to go into business. That's bad.
Yeah.
Good for a first volume, lower the barrier to entry, get people hooked. Okay, on board. $15 to $20, that's doable. You know, particularly if you're not having to sample the property at that point. Mm-hmm. I think for a lot of the stuff, once you start getting above that price point, that's where I think there starts to get more resistance to sales, more pushback.
Absolutely.
Now, the other thing I found interesting in comparing these charts was the number of items that were that way, of what that were the predominant price point. Because for the first few years of the chart, it was the minority of items were at that price point. Then there hit a point where it was the majority of items. In some cases, over 200 of the top 300 items were at that main price point. And again, at that point, it was $299. Then it falls down as we start to see that $399 until $399 becomes the lead. And even then, at roughly half the number of items. And now we're again getting back up to, actually, we're past 200. We're around the 250 items a month at that on the comic side. Whereas on the trade side, even looking at the top 300 and stuff, we're still only talking anywhere between 50 and 70, usually, items that are at that most popular price point.
Mm-hmm.
And this time around, it was under 50 items. So it comes down to, well, we've got a popular price point on the trade side. There's so much, so many different price points on the trade side that it's again, an uneven playing field. And that kind of goes back to your earlier comment on the cadence of release. The other big difference between trades and comics is comics, generally speaking, an issue a month. Sometimes more, sometimes less, but that's like the default.
Yeah.
Comics are more regular than trades. Trades, 6 months, maybe 9 months, maybe a year, year and a half sometimes. Maybe it's once a quarter if it's coming out every other week. There's so much differentiation because it's not the regular habitual release that we've got on the comic side. Some of this is original material, like Sunstone Volume 6 at rank, 282 or thereabouts, is an original graphic novel. You don't crank one of those out all the time. It takes some time to put together an original trade. You know, whereas collecting the next thing of Batman that's coming out every other week or something, you can do that a lot quicker.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think those waveforms, if you will, of when something at that peak in a release and not, you wind up with different kind of harmonic oscillations where things all kind of swing in. And guess what? We've got a Walking Dead and a Saga and something big, you know, Paper Girls or whatever else, I guess, coming out at one time, and boom, you know, Image crests to a really high level. And then it's a couple of months before that happens again.
Yeah. And I think some of that is based on the publishing schedule, because the other thing I'm not sure if we talked about in the past is that for the other markets, mm-hmm. things like the bookstores and Amazon, a lot of the publishers are required to submit what they're going to be publishing 6 months to a year out. So, you know, to have the listings, that's how actually a lot of people know when stuff is coming out before it's even in previews, because yeah. they can find a listing on Amazon or a listing on Barnes and Noble. And so, you know, some of these publishing trends, there are seasons in publishing, and obviously, like, you know, basically late October, early November, there's a lot of quote unquote good books or big books published because everyone wants to have stock in stores available for the Christmas season. Mm-hmm. So some of that, you're absolutely right. That's why you see some months of just incredible sales and other months, you know, not so incredible.
Well, and certainly if you can pick and choose when your material comes out, and let's face it, if you're a publisher creator, you often can, particularly if it's creator owned, mm-hmm. if it's property at DC, they're going to do that for you. Same with Marvel and such. But if you can control when it comes out, you're maybe going to want to give some thought as to, well, when's it most beneficial to come out? Mm-hmm. You know, is it good to have something come out, say, early July or early August? Well, golly, Comic-Con's in July, and wouldn't it be nice to have it at your booth, put it out in July?
Mm-hmm.
You know, those sorts of things come into play. The most mind-bending example of that I can think of is on the comic side from many years ago, and it was Love and Capes by Tom Zoller, where he got, it was a quarterly book. And I'm like, quarterly book? My God, what kind of story momentum is that going to have? And then when he releases one of those quarterly books for free on Free Comic Book Day, and then again available for pay in case you missed it, which I thought was an interesting move too, you're like, what is he thinking? He's giving away 25% of his stuff a year for free. Yet it had amazing content, incredible story momentum, and that's one of the things that got me on the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't pass up free. I can. I usually don't, though. But that's that's somebody who thought long and hard about how he was releasing his material and why, and I think has garnered a solid fan base as a result of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think he's also a better storyteller than and business person than maybe a lot of people in the industry. But I've got tons of respect and whatnot for Tom Zoller, great guy. But I think the risk of putting out one of your four books a year as free material and Free Comic Book Day, man, that's not something I think a lot of people would have the ability, however you want to phrase that, to go do.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them shouldn't, because not all the material can hold up to that. Because if you like something for free and then it's, do you want to pay $3.99 or whatever for it? Not everyone's going to say, you know what? Yeah, I will. Because we've seen that a lot on the comic side where the dollar first issue and the $3.99 second issue sell roughly the same number of dollars, but a quarter of the number of units.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah.
So.
Hmm. Yeah, it's complicated. That's for sure.
It is. It is. And I think that the readership for trades, you know, you look at how many of these, particularly when we go below 300, we're at like 240 units or below.
Mm-hmm.
The readers for trades are not as necessary. Let me be careful how I phrase this. I was going to say not necessarily as voracious of a reader as, say, the comics side. I think they are, but in very different ways. I'm immediately reminded of the photos James put up this week on the Slack channel of his box from Cowabunga and the seven or eight, you know, omnibuses and stuff he'd gotten.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly a voracious reader in that respect, but that may hold him for a good couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
If nothing else, it takes time to assemble that next bookcase.
Yeah, that's a good point. He's gonna have to get another house just like you eventually, right?
Yeah, yeah. Good problem to have, I think.
Yeah, just to store it all.
You know, it's just interesting to see how some of this, because again, we got a ton of reorder activity, particularly when we get below 300, even well above it. Some of this is just doing a couple hundred units, but is already piling up to a fair amount.
Yeah, I wonder if, I mean, you might also see just the stores, more and more stores are just ordering what they know they can sell, and they're just only replacing things when they sell it. You know what I mean? Like, that's why you're seeing 200, 300 copies at a time. Otherwise, I don't know how to explain a lot of these very low sales. You know, there's just this slow trickle. And the only question I have is, I hope that these publishers have got their business model squared away where the cost to warehouse these copies until they go out, you know, drip.
Yeah.
You know, that's right. And you obviously see sometimes the each publisher at a different time has blowout sales because they need their space in their warehouse.
Well, and I think retailers should be conservative on what they order and when they order it. Certainly order to fill a known demand versus a potential demand. And part of why I think they ought to do that is both Marvel and DC now have digital services.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that whole Comixology thing, of course. So if you really want to go read something, you don't need to go head to your local store and go buy it. You can get a digital copy fairly easily if you want to.
Yeah. And that's something I've been wondering long term, is if the quote unquote classics, the evergreens that we talk about, like the Vertigos, the Watchmans, they eventually become, when DC, Marvel, everyone has their own digital, you know, you pay 15, 20 bucks a month, you get access to everything that's ever been published. You know, that's still, when I say everything that's ever been published, that's still probably years away. Not as many years for Marvel, because they've digitized so much of theirs, but probably for DC. At a certain point, you know, especially it's hard to get some of these things because they go in and out of print. You just kind of say, why don't I just read all of the last 25 years of Vertigo on my iPad? And you just sign up for 2 or 3 months with the DC app. You pay $30 and you can read literally thousands of dollars of comics.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I've got sitting right here in arm's reach is the Crisis on Multiple Earths trades, including the team-up trades and such. And I was thinking, you know, part of why I have them here is I want to do some back-issue spotlights on those at some point. It's just an introduction to the classic DC Universe.
Mm-hmm.
And then it occurred to me to go look on the DC Universe app to see if they were there. And sure enough, Flash of Two Worlds, matter of fact, Flash up from 105 to 278 and then some stuff after it, all there. I think the entire original run of Justice League of America is all there, including all of the crossovers. So do people need to go chase down these volumes? No, not really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a shame because there's a certain aspect of the tangible comic that is a joy to behold for some of us. But I also get the convenience of the digital version.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
If DC were thinking, they would be doing some kind of marketing campaign to be walking people from the Flash of Two Worlds through the JLA-JSA crossovers up through Crisis on Infinite Earths in time for the Crisis on Infinite Earth, you know, crossover on the WB or CW shows and such.
Mm-hmm.
You know, garner that kind of momentum and interest and bake it into, hey, learn more about the characters in the comics and such. But that goes back to, even though there's a lot of interest in these characters on TV and in movies, translating that into the comics is sometimes a hard sell. But that's something where they've both Marvel and DC have those digital services, and I've had more than one coworker, particularly on the Marvel side, you know, around the time the Captain America Civil War movie was coming out, were commenting, yeah, I've got the Marvel thing, I'm going to go dive through all of the original Civil War story. Great. They've already chalked up the cost of the subscription, so for them it was effectively free.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's the Netflixification of almost everything, right? I mean, there's Spotify for music, Netflix for TV and video, and then, you know, you're going to have Disney Plus coming out here. Almost every major media company is going to have their own version. It's interesting. It's going to be an interesting next 10, 15 years in terms of how everyone gets used to how they consume their entertainment. You know, and wonder if we're moving from an ownership model to this renting model. And it'll be interesting. What'll be interesting is, you know, on the TV and movie side, you see these companies pulling their exclusive content in and not distributing it anywhere else to encourage people to subscribe to their thing. And then you get to a point where, well, how many of these different packages do I have to subscribe to?
Yeah.
And so on the comic side, it'll be interesting to see, you know, obviously Marvel and DC will have their own, but what will it look like? You know, will you subscribe for 6 months, read everything you want? You know, it's kind of like how I do HBO. I only pay for HBO when there's a show on that one I want to watch, and then I turn it off when I don't, and then I'll turn it on for another 2 months and I'll watch like three or four shows that I want to watch, and then I'll turn it off for 6 months. You know what I mean?
Well, I think they're pushing in a direction where that has to happen because there's so many services.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Marvel and DC are big enough content providers and have a universe of their own of material that they can do that kind of a model. But there are other publishers out there that have good stuff, but not enough critical mass of content for me to say, you know what, I'll sign up for that. And that's true both on the comic side, but also in the movie and TV stuff. I mean, I'm a big fan of the Stargate stuff. It's hard to really justify saying, you know what, I'm going to go sign up for Stargate Command that's got Stargate.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think anything else. So there's not really that incentive to go do it. Whereas if it were, say, the sci-fi, you know, channel had a streaming service and all the stuff they've had in past years was on it,
mm-hmm.
that would include all that, I'd certainly consider it at that point because there'd be a bit more of a critical mass.
Well, and you know, you just reminded me of one is I would love to watch the new Star Trek show, but I'm not paying for CBS. It's all access. So when that show is eventually, I mean, I'm not paying for it ongoing. So when that show each, I haven't started yet, but as the end of each season, I would basically go on there, sign up for a month and plow through two seasons in like 4 or 5 days. And then I'd be done with it. You know what I mean?
It certainly incentivizes that kind of binge watching.
Yeah. And that's the only thing I'm interested on there. Most of the other shows have no appeal to me or I've already seen them. You know, a lot of the CBS All Access is kind of back catalog. You know, obviously, over time, each of these different services is going to be interested in creating content that draws people and keeps them subscribed. And I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of these digital platforms eventually went to a if you buy 12 months, you know, if you quote unquote lock yourself in for a year, we give it to you for $5 less. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know, to reduce that turnover, because eventually when all of these are all up and running, they're all going to have a problem with people turning it on and off, on and off, on and off. And so they're going to have to come up with ways to incentivize people not to do that.
But that's also why Discovery was released on a weekly basis versus, you know, Netflix dropping a series all at once.
Yeah. And I get that in terms of it definitely helps them in that respect, but it's still not valuable enough to me. So that's why I would wait till the end of the season, like the day after the last episode aired, then I would sign up. In fact, I haven't even signed up for my free, 1 week or 2 week trial on CBS. I could sign up for that, watch both seasons of Star Trek, and then cancel it before my trial is up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and again, I think they're incentivizing people to do that. And I do think the subscription model for the audience side of things is where it's going. And at some point, the digital stream is going to be enough revenue on the comic side that it becomes one of the sustaining forces versus, again, the monthly purchases. Because I do think the periodical comics, the individual issues, is kind of the lifeblood of the content creation. The trades are kind of the profit side, and the digital sales are good, certainly another revenue stream that helps a lot, but are not enough to sustain the content in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, and I think with every day it gets slightly and slightly more likely, just because the younger crowd is more digital savvy and wants to read their stuff that way, it's going to grow and grow and grow until it becomes the predominant thing. And that means DC and Marvel are going to have a definite benefit because they've got a big enough back library of material and a big enough current library of material to have somebody say, you know what, I do want more than just Batman. Yeah, I'll go, you know, in for that. Versus some of these smaller publishers, they're going to need to go through some kind of aggregator of some sort, a Netflix kind of a thing, be it Comixology, be it whatever,
mm-hmm.
for it to have enough content for people to say, you know what, I'll sign up for that service.
Absolutely. And it will be interesting because, as you know, Comixology is owned by Amazon. And over time, Amazon has, you know, once they get their teeth into certain markets, they're known to start giving less and less appealing terms. Obviously, as a business, for-profit business, they're looking to maximize their return. Mm-hmm. So they start clawing back some of that margin. So it will be interesting to see how Image and Dark Horse and some of the non-DC Marvel players, how they're able to handle their contracts to either stay out of Comixology Unlimited, or if Comixology says, if you want to be able to sell on here, you have to be able, you know, a lot of the same things they've done with their Kindle books to the major publishers, are they slowly but surely going to start doing to the comics publishers?
Yeah. Well, and do we see a cooling off of what would otherwise have been hot comic properties because of the availability of the material on these subscription services? You know, are we going to see a bump in increase on Crisis on Infinite Earths, you know, later in the year when the CW crossover happens? Or is some of that going to get bled into the DC Universe Online? Somebody saying, you know what, that is interesting. I'm going to subscribe for a couple of days. I'm going to go read it and I'm going to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I see both sides where it could happen either way. It's just hard to tell. But, you know, I look at so many of these sales being relatively soft and have to think that there's both that lack of urgency to go read it right now and that ease availability in digital format that helps reduce that urgency and the need to go head to the store and go buy one of these hard copies.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see where things head and, you know, how the industry kind of evolves. And if this is just an anomaly and we just happen to have low sales this month, or if it's not an anomaly and it becomes more regular.
Yeah, it will be interesting to kind of see the overall trend and kind of keep track of that and see if we see and you know, more towards the end of the year or, you know, early next year, we can see those book stand numbers. And if we see that there's still healthy growth in collected edition sales, you know, specifically that you would expect to see in the direct market. Obviously, there's still quite a bit of growth in the kids and young reader graphic novels that you see a lot of that growth in the book scan. But mm-hmm. you know, the quote unquote superhero comics and like that, if you still see a decent amount of growth in that, in the book scan numbers for this year, when they're published, we may say, oh, well, maybe some of that, those sales are just shifting from the direct market over there.
It could be. I would kind of think that the model that would work best for everyone involved is for readers to get introduced to comics through probably like a Scholastic outlet or something, from there migrate to the mass market, you know, Barnes & Noble, Amazon type stuff where things are easily available. As they get more hooked into the hobby, gravitate towards the direct market, which is able to get them the more niche material easier, and perhaps serve them a little better in guidance as to what to read next.
Mm-hmm.
That having been said, I kind of doubt that's the way the trend's going to happen.
Yeah, never straightforward, that's for sure.
Well, if stuff's cheaper, people are going to go for the cheaper price. Why not?
Yeah.
I certainly do that. I think everybody should. They can spend more of their money on the stuff and use it better. But it does put things in an interesting position for all the players involved. Like, it's getting to be a more crowded market with the number of properties coming out, and a more competitive market, not just within it, but again, compared to the TV shows, the movies, the video games, etc., both comic-related and just in general, that it's going to be interesting to see if comics continue to remain viable, or if they go the way of the radio play and other forms of entertainment that were really big and ubiquitous at one point and then just kind of faded away.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in terms of when you say comics, I think we should distinguish between like, you know, superhero comics, direct market comics, because I think with the advent of the internet, comics as an art form will always exist.
I differentiate comic strips as their own thing, and I think like XKCD and other things like that are comic strips.
Okay,
those are ubiquitous. Those are not going anyway anytime soon. Mm-hmm. Okay, when I say comics, I mean comic books, either in the individual or even collected into trade type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there are really web comic books in that sense.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And that's, again, not to demean or belittle the other stuff. I think it's a fundamentally different story structure, and it tends to be more, you know, beat joke kind of a thing than narrative story.
Mm-hmm.
And I follow a couple. XKCD and Commit Strip are the two I'm following in terms of web comics these days. And yeah, I think that is something that the web really is a good place for, and is replaced kind of the newspaper in terms of the venue.
Oh, yeah. I mean, kind of like online is basically the millennial and 21st century. That's their newspaper, right? So,
well, and I don't think XKCD and Commit Strip, which are both kind of tech bent in some respects, could or would work or should work in a newspaper.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And particularly some of the stuff that XKCD does that are, from a technical point of view, a little bit mind blowing. He's had a couple where you click on the thing and it literally goes on forever. It's insane. Looking at the price points, as we talked about, in this case it was $16.99 that was the main price point, followed by $19.99 and then $9.99. So still, I think the lower price points are the most popular these days. We did have some stuff at the $100, $125, and $150 price point. Those are the omnibus du jours. If we go down for the full $500, we actually had something at $500, which is a little bit insane. But again, those things don't come around that often. And I do think having those kinds of higher price point items every once in a while, not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just when they come out with too many of those too soon, too frequently, that's where it starts to get, I think, a little problematic for some people.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the things that I think IDW really needs to be the most cognizant of. Like when they do those artist editions and so forth, sometimes it's feast or famine. They've got nothing, and then they've got like two or three in the same month. It's like, man, spread those out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then I completely agree with you, because you'll often see in previews them advertising, basically re-soliciting previous ones. And I think they got ahead of the demand. I think that they had a few that sold very well. And obviously they started with the Masters and people like Jack Kirby and stuff, where you'd have, you know, really good sell-through. And then as they started expanding to, you know, not necessarily like B category creators. These are still top flight creators, but they're just so many different artist editions, and they're all very expensive. You know, I don't think they're having nearly as much sell through as they had in the past at the beginning.
If they have one out there for $125 cover, you know, retail price or whatever, and I'm like, yeah, I'm thinking about it, I might get it. If they have two that I'm thinking about and they're both $125 or whatever, and it's like I can't get both, then I might not get either.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's that risk to be had. But it's one of those things that you're competing with what else is out there that given month. And getting if I were running a publishing company and had the resources to do it, I would have somebody who part of their job is to be guesstimating when other stuff's going to come out from other publishers. So you can do kind of, a counter-programming strategy, but try not to release one of your big things around the time that, say, Marvel drops that $500, Avengers Earth's Mightiest Box Set Slipcase Edition or whatever, which has, you know, a billion pages of content or whatever. If you're doing something that's, Avengers-ish, but hitting that same target audience, if their money's going to be bled dry by that or that upcoming Crisis Infinite Earths slipcase or whatever, I mean, this would have been a good month for one of the other publishers to come out with something that wasn't going to top the charts most months, but there wasn't a whole lot of competition on the trade side. It might have been a good time to come out.
Mm-hmm.
So just something to think about. It's just knowing what everybody else is doing and planning accordingly to either work into that or strategically against that might not be a bad idea. Might be a complete waste of time. I don't know, but it's certainly something I'd look into.
Definitely worth looking into. That's for sure.
Yeah. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it for us.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or SKUs and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and/or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and English language itself seem to work very differently there.